brothers and sisters, about the troubles we experienced in the province of Asia. We are under great pressure, far beyond our ability to endure, so that we despaired of life itself. Indeed, we felt we had received the sentence of death, but this happened that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God, who raises the dead. He has delivered us from such a deadly peril, and he will deliver us again. On him we have set our hope that he will continue to deliver us. As you help us by your prayers, then many will give thanks on our behalf for the gracious favor granted us in answer to the prayers of many.
So thank you, Sam, for that reading. I know in some ways that as you follow that, it's a bit of a puzzle and it gets confusing, but we're going to see how I can explain this to you a little bit. You know, in many ways, we live our lives in pursuit of ease. We want things to go smoothly. We desire stress-free lives. Some demand safe spaces where no one gives you trouble and you're left alone. Vacations and weekends are the highlights of the year, and people look forward to retirement so they can just sit back and take it easy. And yet, in our saner moments, we know that all that's a dream. We live in a world where there's suffering, there's pain, there's toil, there's trouble, and that's the norm. Even those weekends that we look forward to don't go as smoothly and as nice as we often think they should. And while we want to run from tribulation, we need to instead learn to turn toward it and face it. There was a counselor who was talking to a man who was experiencing PTSD. And he used this phrase that I latched onto that really connects to these verses. He was telling the man, instead of running away from what he was struggling with, he says, you need to initiate an active engagement with the dragon that burned you. You know, to deny that we live in a wicked world and that even we as individuals have the ability of great evil or great malevolence in our own hearts is to run away from what is real, is to live a make-believe world. And the more I read the Bible, the more I see that Paul had us face reality and face the true reality, who is Jesus Christ. And so in 2 Corinthians here, these first 11 verses, Paul actively engages the dragon that burnt him and that drove him into the true source of strength and victory. He didn't run away from it. He didn't run away from reality, but ran to reality. And there he found the Heavenly Father, the source of truth and reality and the God of all comfort. And yet he didn't do it alone, and we're going to examine how Paul faced his troubles and how he and the rest of us should confront the dragon that burns us. So I've been asked to unpack these 11 verses, and for me that's an impossible task in 25 minutes. Instead, I'm going to remove two gems from these 11 verses, and then I'm going to tell you a true story that illustrates it and hand it over to you and let you do with it as you wish. This first gem that comes out is obvious in our first reading, the word comfort. He uses it 10 times in 5 verses, verses 3 through 7. And you can't help but see that this is central to what he's saying, this word comfort. And so it's important for us to, first of all, understand what does he mean by the word comfort, and then what is he saying regarding it, how are we to deal with it. And as I was thinking of it, you know, comfort is something that I know when it happens to me. I know what comfort is when I receive comfort. And I said, that's comforting. But to define it and say what happened is more difficult. And so we may think of it just being soothed, or, you know, maybe you have gone through something and someone has come to you and tried to comfort you, patted you on the back or something, and it wasn't soothing. And maybe another time it was. So the struggle of what comfort is and how that works is difficult sometimes. We think of it being cheered up sometimes, or getting some kind of relief when I'm hurt or I'm in sorrow, and the relief comes, and so I'm comforted. Our English word comes from two Latin words. A lot of us don't even know that, but it's come and fort. And the word come in Latin means with, and fort is like a fort. It's strength. And so we say, you're coming with strength. You're sharing strength with someone. And in the Greek, the language that Paul wrote this in, is a beautiful word picture. If you can see the beautiful word picture of this word comfort that comes in, and it literally means to call someone by your side. That's a literal word. And when I think of comfort, I think of, this is one of my favorite pictures, two of my grandsons walking down arm in arm. And it necessarily means there's a relationship here. It's not something, and you know this, when someone comforts you, and it's, or you know, you're maybe at a funeral, and someone that you don't know comes up to you and says, I'm sorry for your loss. And that's good. We should do things like that, or I'm sorry for what happened. But when it's someone you know that you have not a casual relationship with, but you have a arm-to-arm, or arm-around-each-other relationship, now you know the comfort that you're getting. You can relate to that kind of comfort more than something that you don't really have a good, someone that you don't have a good relationship. It's a arm-around-arm comfort. So God's comfort isn't just a soothing or being cheered up, but it's really knowing the relationship you have with God and God walking with you through whatever trouble that you're going through. It's God with his arm around you. It says here, God is the God of comfort, or all comfort. He's the Father of compassion, the God of all comfort. And this word Father means he's the originator. In the Hebrew way of thinking, when you said Father, it was more than just who parented you, but it was the originator of something, or the source of something. And so here we have the source of a river here. He's the source. He originates comfort. Compassion isn't something that God just tries hard to be. He is the creator. He's the source of compassion. This is God's character. This is who God is. And so many people think of God the Father as stern, as the one who has all wrath, the punisher. But God's character is comfort. And it says he is the God of all comfort. And this word God here means he owns it. He sustains it. He creates it. Wherever there is comfort, whoever's doing it, God is the source of comfort. He's the originator of all comfort. This is the Father's forte. It's his nature. And when you give comfort to someone else, you are showing that you're created in God's image. This is why people who aren't Christians can comfort other people, because they're created in God's image and they're just acting out God's character that's in them because God created them that way. And so we look at this comfort and we think, well, what's the purpose of it? What's our purpose of comfort? We were talking about this in William's class on Job today. And it says here, God doesn't remove all tribulations. Some way we get in our mind, I don't know how we do this, because I don't I know I've never preached this, but we don't become Christians to avoid all trouble. We don't say, well, when I become a Christian, then everything's going to be okay. My life is going to go well. Well, I'm telling you to wake up. That's not real. That's not reality. God does not remove all tribulations, all sufferings. Paul talks about his troubles here, his distress, his suffering. And this literally means having a heavy weight put on you. Having a heavy weight put on you. And so we use the words like, I have the weight of the world on my shoulders. Or we may say, my heart is heavy. Have you ever had that? My heart is heavy. I can hardly breathe. I feel this weight on me. Grief bore down on me. I have a heavy load to carry. And that word that Paul uses when he says distress, he's talking about this very thing that we feel the weight of the world on our shoulders. And so Paul looked at these burdens. He said, what do we do with these burdens? And he says, it's not something terrible to carry, but it's an opportunity to help others. And this is amazing because we don't think that way. But Paul thought that way, and he's calling you, if you're a Christian, to think this way too. Is when you suffer something, it's not something just to bear, but it's something that you are going to learn so that you can pass on God's comfort to others. And something happens wonderful within us. The comfort of God, and this word salvation comes in here. Let me read to you verse 6 again. He says, if we are distressed, it is for your comfort and salvation. If we are comforted, it is for your comfort, which produces in you patient endurance of the same suffering that we suffer. This is the New International Version. And it sounds like God is giving you trouble in order that you will have patience, endurance. That's what it sounds like, doesn't it? Now, it's a little confusing, all the words there, but read over the NIV again. It sounds like you get this trouble, and then when you go through it, you're going to be a more patient person. And so we say it jokingly, I don't want any more patience because I don't want any more trouble, right? But if you read other translations, you'll find that this is actually a difficult word, a difficult verse to translate. I took almost an hour translating this one verse into my paraphrase, which I'm going to read to you in a moment. So I want you to appreciate 1 hour on this one verse. It's a difficult, the wording is difficult to translate. And so you'll find other translations that are going to translate it a little bit differently. And let me show you, this is, I think it's a New English Version. It says, if we are afflicted, it is for your comfort and salvation. If we are comforted, it is for your comfort, which you experience. So here's the purpose, not patience. It is for your comfort, which you experience when you patiently endure the same sufferings we suffer. In other words, he's saying, yeah, what's going to happen? The purpose of this tribulation is so that you will experience God's comfort. But you're not going to get it if you don't patiently endure. He says, don't shortcut it. If you want to understand and experience the fullness of God's comfort and this life of salvation, he's not talking about being saved here. He's talking about a life of salvation. Then don't shortcut the suffering. Don't run away from it. Bear up under it with God's strength. You have God's strength. Bear up under it. And what you will experience is God's comfort. That's the purpose. So that you will experience God's comfort. Do you want to live just a nominal, shallow Christian life? Kind of a sweet and easy walk with the Lord? Or do you want to experience a dynamo of Christ's life in you? Active, powerful, victorious. Then you have to go through the suffering, and you will experience Christ in you. And so the road we must walk to live in this full, and the writers go through this over and over, this full and overflowing joy. Jesus said, my joy is in you, and it's filling you up and overflowing you, you have to experience the same thing Jesus experienced, which was trouble and suffering. It means to live in this patient endurance. Bear up under it. God gives you the strength. And when you come through, you will see God's comfort in ways that you can't imagine. Let me give you the second gem now. Peace. Right at the beginning, Paul says, grace and peace to you. And a lot of times we read that and we think of it, God, a normal greeting. Dear, Alan is at the beginning of a letter. No, this is not just Paul throwing in some words here, but he's saying this is foundational. This is what we're all about. And that's why he began all of his letters, most of his letters, with grace and peace to you. And we don't have time to look at the word peace. That's another gem. We're going to look at this word peace. Did I say peace twice? All right. We don't have time to look at the word grace, but we have the time to look at the word peace. You know, back in when I introduced these thoughts, I said, we are people who seek ease and a stressless life. But I really think there's something deep in us that is seeking something that we've twisted into ease. We really don't want ease. We really don't want stressless living. What we want is peace. That's what we really want. I believe that we're actively seeking. God has placed in our heart this desire for God peace, not human peace. And what we want is not this peace, but ease. It's not a stressless life. It's our heart that's saying, I want God peace. I want something from God that's called peace. And what this word means is that in God's peace, it means everything, my whole life is tied together. My life fits. It's the way it should be. It's working as it should. In the midst of all the trials and troubles and everything, it's like a puzzle that is coming together. This is the way life should be. It's a wholeness. It's just the completeness of life. You feel whole. You feel invigorated. You feel this is the way God created me to be. And it's not the absence of conflict, but it's life in the middle of conflict and in the middle of trouble with God by your side. That's peace. It's not the absence of trouble. It's God by your side, and you're breathing like you should, and you're living like you should, and this is the way it should be, and it's victorious living. Human peace is shallow, it's temporary. God's peace is deep, and it's powerful, and it's permanent, and it's personal, and it's not necessarily peaceful. God's peace is not always peaceful. It is this God of peace that gives you comfort, not through a peaceful existence, but through the battles of life. You have your spiritual sword out, and you're scarred. And more could be said about this word peace, that this paradox of peace. But let me show you one verse that shows the God of peace and how he handles things. Romans chapter 16, and the God of peace will soon crush Satan under your feet. Crush? Does that sound peaceful? The God of peace. He's got his arm around you and his sword is drawn too. And he says, and I'm going to crush Satan under your feet. Not under my feet, God. Under your feet. You're going to participate in this. Two gems. Peace and comfort. Now, a true story of a Christian engaging in the battle that burned him. I have two brother-in-laws. One is 2 weeks younger than me, and one is 2 years younger than me. So I relate to this personally. Both are in the middle of a tribulation, a heavy weight. One has cancer that reoccurred. He's gone through that again. Surgery a second time. The other one has ALS. If you're not familiar with it, it's a devastating disease. Both are Christians, and both have inspired and encouraged me in the midst of their sufferings. And I don't have time to go into detail and with each one, what each one shared with me. I talked to one on the phone yesterday. But both have talked about their comfort and the love that they've felt and they've experienced and they continue to experience. So last week I was with John, the one diagnosed with ALS. And I wrote up a little encounter that we have with each other. And instead of me telling the story, I just wrote it story form. I'm going to read it to you. It's a story. So I'm going to sit down, read you a story. It's short. I doubt it if it's 200 words. I was sitting at the kitchen table, taking advantage of getting in a few minutes of study while my wife and sister were out of the house, and John was sitting on the couch, resting and reading. He and I had spent a couple of hours in his garden. The progress of his ALS was apparent from my last visit with him 6 months earlier. I lifted bags of earth and filled in areas of the garden with it as he tended to plants that were less taxing. As we walked back up to his house, he said what I had done would have taken him 2 or 3 days, and he thanked me for his help. I should have gone in earlier, he confessed. That wore me out. It's easy to lose track of times when you're gardening, I said. And we both got bottles of water before sitting down. It wasn't long before John got up and walked into the kitchen and sat on a stool at the kitchen bar. What are you studying? He asked. The first chapter of 2 Corinthians, the God of all comfort. Interesting, he said. And then he began sharing his thoughts. The outpouring of love and concern from the church has been amazing in the last few months since my diagnosis, and that's comforting. A lot of people don't know what to do or say. They kind of freak out. He turned to me, eyes wide, and said, ALS! He looked back out the window toward his garden. But what they don't understand is that I'm already dying, and have been all my life. We all are already dying. So I tell them to pray for others, my wife, children, grandchildren, not for my healing, but for what they will be going through. He paused for a few seconds. I thought he might be finished, but he had more to share. I've always known this, but it has become more real in the last few months. What I want is for others to get their life right with God. If what I'm going through helps others turn to God, then I'm successful. And Alan, everyone is going to go through something eventually. He turned from the window and locked eyes with me. You are going to go through something too. Everyone is. Unless you're immersed in God's Word, I don't know how you'll make it. Unless you're reading God's Word, you won't know peace. And you can't really understand the peace of God fully until you suffer. Shallow suffering means shallow peace. You need to prepare now for peace, for the peace and comfort you'll need later. He was quiet for a moment. I could see he had more to say, so I waited silently without words. Then he said, sometimes people come up to me and ask, what can I do? Almost in desperation. His eyes teared up and his voice broke a little. And then he said, sorry, but I get kind of choked up. But sometimes I wonder if they're jealous of me. The peace and comfort I have, and the fact that I'm not freaking out. I know where I'm going. I know everything's going to be all right. What do you do when the dragon burns you? Because one day it will. Any Christian, any preacher, any teacher that tells you life is going to be easy once you become a Christian either doesn't know what he's talking about, or he's lying to you, or he's looking for some money. I don't know. God doesn't take away the trouble. He doesn't take away the tribulations. Sometimes they go away. But sometimes you face them. You face the dragon. And you bear with it, patience, endurance. And when you do, the God of all comfort has his arm around you. I'm going to read you my paraphrase. I do this. This helps me in my study. I try and bring out the meaning of the words, and maybe it'll help you. All boasting and bragging be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the God of deep feelings and tender concern for and toward us as we struggle through life and our misfortunes and difficulties. He is the God of all comfort and encouragement. In all our troubles, when we are beat down and under pressure, when our sorrows cause us to ache deeply, and when we feel trapped with seemingly no options available, he calls us close to his side. The purpose of God by my side is so that we will have God-saturated power to call out to others and invite them into this warm embrace of comfort. In every form of distress and anguish, we can extend God by my side to God by our side. For what we receive from God is the very thing we pass on to others. For just as Christ's deep feelings, heart desires, and sufferings overflow toward us, so there will be a superabundance and overflow of his comfort and joy in our lives. If, on the one hand, we find ourselves in a tight spot, it is for a God by your side moment, and for you to engage in and fully experience your salvation life. On the other hand, if we are in the middle of experiencing God by our side, it is for you to have the shared experience of God by your side. This privilege of experiencing God so close comes when you bear the weight of suffering through to the end with patience. You join us in like suffering. And the confident and positive expectation that we have for your future is as solid as a rock. For it is crystal clear that just as you are joined to us at the hip and feeling our pain and suffering, so also you are fully attached to us in God at our side. For we don't want you to be out of the loop regarding the pain, pressure, and quite frankly, the persecution we endured in Asia. We were knocked down. Load upon heavy load piled on us. We didn't have the power to lift a finger. We were utterly at a loss with no way of escape and out of options. We thought we were about to take our last breath, barely hanging on to dear life. Indeed, in our hearts of hearts, it was like a death sentence had been issued in our names. The whole purpose of this was so that we would not have self-confidence and trust in self, but have trust and confidence in God. He presently and actively raises the dead. And it was he who snatched us out of the jaws of death. He pulled us close to himself, out of an overwhelming dark pit. And that wasn't the end of it all. He will, in the future, draw us to himself for himself. Based on this rescue, we are fully assured that he will continue to draw us to himself in all future troubles we find ourselves in. You join with us in your heartfelt petitions, and your numerous prayers bless us as you turn your faces toward us. The end result is the empowerment of God's grace that will cause a profuse chorus of thanksgiving from many. God bless us in our study. Take that in your life, because we all will go through something. Experience a God of comfort. If you're outside of Christ, we're going to invite you to come into Christ today, because you will experience a God of all comfort amongst many other things in your salvation life. Our elders will come and receive you. If you have any need, come as we stand and as we sing.